On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Bearhall recap the loss to the Dallas Mavericks, the ascendance of Jana Musa, Rhodey Kurucs' return to the starting lineup, and which two surprising Nets does Josh think they should consider trading? Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into another episode of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Back with me discussing, unfortunately, a fourth straight loss, disheartening for the Brooklyn Nets. It's Marcus Bearhall, but he's always here to cheer us up. Marcus, what's going on, man?
Josh, you know, this was looking like another bad Nets night, but there was some good news by the end, so hopefully that's enough to take some of the sting away for you. I don't know how you're feeling about all this, but, you know.
Nah, too much sting, It's like a bad, bad bee sting. Yeah, exactly. It is like the police. Good reference
Thank
there.
You.
But yeah, so Nets lost to the Mavs 123-111. It was pretty close throughout. Unfortunately, they just didn't have the firepower to get it done last night. Woj surprised us, I guess, with a late holiday treat, saying that Caris LeVert is expected to be back against Toronto on Saturday. Of course, knowing the Nets expected, it does not in any sense mean that it's going to happen. This is still very much up in the air, is how I'm taking it. I think Atkinson said LeVert has been very close for about a week and a half now. I don't know why he like got that started so early. I think a lot of people were expecting him to play last night against the Mavs, but no go. And he will be back for the Toronto game, fingers crossed. But without him and also without Garrett Temple, who did not play last night, the Nets were very shorthanded. The returns of our old friends Theo Pinson and Jana Musa in the lineup, I'd say one good, one bad in that sense. A lot of Rhodey Kurucs who got the start. DeAndre Jordan flipping spots to Jared Allen to get the start. I think, what'd you make of first the DeAndre change? Because I think that was somewhat unexpected.
Yeah, that felt like it came out of nowhere. This was, I forgot, like vaguely a revenge game for DeAndre just because of that whole like signing and then not signing and then actually signing thing. But yeah, I think we've talked about it where it doesn't really matter a ton which of them Allen or Jordan starts because they wind up playing about the same. I think obviously Jared Allen's like the future. You want him to get like as much minutes and exposure as you can, but it was definitely a different Mavs team without KP out there. So I don't know if that played into it, but yeah, I didn't make too much of it. I think it's only his fourth start of the year. So maybe just trying to mix things up amid the losing streak and just try different things. Obviously, Rhodey got the start too with Temple out. So, yeah, this was like a different look for sure.
Yeah, and like, because without KP, I mean, I guess, so Dwight Powell was starting at center for the Mavs, and he's more so, I mean, he did take a couple threes last night. I think he was 0-4 on all of them. But he's someone that's more so just a pick-and-roll dive threat. So you'd think you'd want Allen out there on him. But I guess with the revenge aspect, even though – does DeAndre even have any, like, vengeance toward Dallas? I feel like anything, it's the other way around.
Yeah, it should be completely
one-sided.
Even
though after he signed there years later. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so, like, DeAndre got the start. I would have thought that you put Jared Allen to start to guard Dwight Powell because he's more agile, and then you have DeAndre – matching up against Boban, who obviously is kind of just like dwarfs any center on the Nets, and like it's still crazy how big this guy is. Like he literally makes DeAndre Jordan look like he's 6'5". But I don't know. I think like both of them were kind of ineffective. I think Jordan had some decent moments on offense, but I felt defensively his effort was terrible. There were a lot of plays where after like the initial effort, he was just kind of taken out completely, and it allowed the Mavericks big man to get the offensive rebound or get an easy basket on a switch. Like I just don't think DeAndre's effort was up to snuff, and it's been a case a lot of times this season. I feel like mostly he's been fine recently, but last night was definitely disappointing. And Allen just like he finished with 9 points and 6 rebounds, but he was like didn't make any impact on the game whatsoever. Like I've been pretty disappointed with his effort the last few games.
Yeah, I thought he had turned a corner. I know there was like that stretch where him and Dinwiddie together were really clicking and kind of showing like that chemistry that they had last year and like what the team was last year, and it looked like they were building off that. But yeah, it seems like he's taken a step back towards where he was before, at least over the last stretch of games, because before this, like he was putting up double doubles pretty consistently. He was scoring in the 20s like on a semi-regular basis, and then the last five games his point totals are 6, 4, 16, 6, and 9. So he's back to like not being as aggressive as he was. His rebounding numbers have dipped. He had a stretch where he had like pretty much like 10 straight games in double figures in rebounding. Now he's back down in like 5 rebounds, 6 rebounds. Like it definitely, it seems like it kind of came out of nowhere though. I'm not sure why he's back to playing like this. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, he was good in that Houston game, but like against the Knicks, he was terrible. Last night, he didn't do much. Minnesota, he was like in foul trouble most of the night and like didn't make an impact. Like it is disconcerting to see, because of like you'd think Dinwiddie is a good pick and roll point guard. I mean, maybe it's coincided with a bit of Dinwiddie's struggles now throwing the lob pass both last night and Minnesota. Like he's been terrible throwing that back to his early season form. But I don't know what it is. I mean, he just hasn't been as aggressive on either end. And I think for him, he's still in his third season, kind of figuring things out. He's still a young, raw player, but the Nets need him to be bigger than that. And he's kind of, you know, he's made some improvements on the margins since he got in the league. But overall, I mean, his free throw percentage has dipped a lot this year, coinciding with his swoon last year, at the end of last year also. So it's like there are things in his game where he's still struggling with that consistency, and for a third year player you'd want him to tighten that up a bit.
Yeah, it's been weird because I think when he was drafted he was viewed as more of a project guy, and he kind of similar to Kurucs, kind of like burst on the scene with a lot more than was expected at the beginning, and then has sort of plateaued. I mean, hopefully like Rhodey playing more gets him past that, but both guys like seem to start out above expectations and then have still like stayed there, like above what you would have thought they would be initially. But for Allen, I think by this point you would have hoped to see more aggression, you would have hoped to see more just like passion and tenacity. It seems like a lot of times he kind of drifts in and out, and it's the same with DJ, probably for different reasons. I think DJ is just like not there athletically as much as he was,
right.
I think Allen, it's almost more mental than anything else.
Yeah, that could be the case. We'll see if it improves, like as the year goes on. I think having more ball handlers out there could be good for him, especially if he's like last night. He was overlapping minutes. I think with Pinson playing the point guard, it's just not going to give him any opportunities to succeed. So hopefully, when LeVert comes back, and when Kyrie comes back, he'll have more chances and be able to feed off that a little bit. But the Nets definitely need him kind of back to where he was when he was on that big double-double streak and really make an impact at the five position. What do you think about Kurek, speaking of him? Because despite a poor shooting night, I thought he was actually a really impactful player for the Nets.
Yeah, definitely. He's always been a guy who like has brought a spark, whether he's starting or coming off the bench. And so I think you and I were both confused as to why he wasn't playing, even through his struggles. Like, he's a guy who you kind of want to get him on track because he can be a key piece going forward, just given his size and his playmaking ability for his position. I was, like you said, he didn't shoot the ball well, but he, our boy Christian Winfield pointed out on Twitter, he had the highest plus minus on the team, if that means anything. Yeah, I mean, it means a little bit. But yeah, just his activity is great. Seeing him out there with the starters, I think, made sense. It slid Joe Harris to the two and Prince to the three, which made the Nets a lot less small than they usually look, which I think is a good thing. And yeah, just like without Temple in there, like, and Temple's not like great at this, but like having a guy who can capably like drive the ball, that was at least somewhat positive to see.
Yeah, no, he had that one nice baseline dunk. I think his rebounding was a really big factor for the Nets. There was three possessions alone that I can think of in the third quarter where he either got the offensive rebound or like was just like his being a pest around the rim caused the Mavericks to knock it off themselves. Like, that's the kind of plays the Nets need, especially when they do get more ball dominant guys back, and guys like Pinson and Musa are out of the lineup, and now you have guys that all kind of want to shoot, you need those glue guys still to mix them in. I think he's still someone that I see a ton of potential in. His three-point shot's not going to be the most consistent. He struggled with his decision-making, but the impact he can have on defense and kind of crashing the boards, I think it's going to be a net positive in the end. And I'd still like to see Kenny put a lot of developmental time into him. I know, obviously, there's a lot going on. He lost favor earlier in the season, but I think overall he brings something to this Nets team that not a lot of other guys do.
Yeah, and with the release of David Nwaba, it like calls back to that too, where the team just needs someone who can like put effort in on defense and who can be a pest, like you said, which Rhodey is definitely capable of doing. And yeah, without Nwaba, they need that kind of energy.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, and I don't think the Nets played well in this game, but like, did they really have a chance to win? I get it. Obviously, Dallas had no KP, no Tim Hardaway, but like, when you go out and Seth Curry shoots 5 of 5 from three, Luka's hitting his threes, Maxi Kleba goes off, hits 3 of 4 from threes, and a huge cheap shot on Jared Allen also. Like, when Dallas shoots 18 of 39 from three, and part of it is due to the Nets not being able to contest, and for some reason playing a zone when they just have no idea how to execute it. Like, I just didn't think the Nets had much of a chance this game, even though it was close. I never felt confident about it.
Yeah, Dallas, like you said, they shot the lights out, 46% from three, 50% from the field. They turned it over 13 times, which is like not terrible. They out-rebounded the Nets. They seemingly like outplayed them by a ton. But yeah, like you said, it was close. I mean, the Nets had a lead in the fourth quarter. If it weren't for that like late run from Luka Doncic, the Nets might have been in it in the last couple minutes. So it's, I don't know. I never like to say it's like you can... Like, it's encouraging that they lost, but it's kind of encouraging that they, like, hung with this team, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to find some positives.
Yeah, no, I'm happy you are. At least one of us is definitely looking at the positive side. I know from my perspective, I would have called this a mile away that the Nets were not going to be able to get the W here. And that's because I'm the type of fan that knows basketball so well that I could choose any game and hopefully call it. Well, we'll see. Well, my bookie puts that to the test. It's the place for all of you, because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. It's football season, NBA, college basketball season's getting underway. Now is the time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. Marcus, are you the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot? Try a parlay?
Yeah, once in a while, for sure.
Yeah, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. Tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code ENTER LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So, Marcus, what did you think? I mean, the Nets did kind of make some noise in the third quarter here, even though they did go to halftime with the lead. I think Musa probably had his best game. I mean, 14 points, 6 of 7 shooting, 2 of 3 on threes. He definitely made an impact. Pinson was doing a lot throughout the game. Some was good. Most, I'd say, was bad, but he definitely put his stamp on it. Like, what did you think of those two guys specifically and the performances they had?
Yeah, I thought Musa did play well. He was hitting like 1-3, especially was like really deep from the outside. Mm-hmm. Pinson, I think I'm a little bit more positive on his performance than you are. I think he was at least able to like create stuff and like do things with the ball in his hand, which like no one else on the team was going to do with Temple out, and with obviously LeVert and Kyrie still down. So I think it was a tough spot. Obviously, he was asked to do more than he should have. He played 25 minutes in this game, but I think given the fact that he hasn't really played lately and that he also isn't very good, I think that like you couldn't have expected much more, which I know is like kind of unfair to grade him like on a curve, but
yeah, come on. What is this?
Yeah, but like I don't know. Like, what do you expect, honestly?
I don't know. I don't know what I expect from him anymore because he sucks. But like, I mean, he's a career 23% shooter from three and he's just jacking them up, like brings the ball up, no passes or anything, just like goes around a pick and chucks up a three. It's not even like it's that wide open. It's like, you're Theo Pinson. You need to just execute the system. Like the one play he had where he picked someone's pocket. I forgot. Was it Luka? Maybe. He picked someone's pocket and then took it all the way down for a dunk. Like, yes. That's what you need out of him. You need it. Like, he's an athletic guy. His instincts on defense aren't terrible. He needs to lead with that as opposed to, like, trying to be this gunner, scorer type, because he's never going to be that. He doesn't have the natural touch. He doesn't have the passing ability. He just can't finish at the rim when he gets there. Like, nothing on offense he does at a even close to average level. So he needs to focus on the things that he can do. And I get he's in a difficult position being the backup point guard on this team now. Maybe he's qualified to be a backup point guard in the G League, but certainly not an NBA team. And it's like, some of the stuff he does, I just wish he'd rein it in a bit more and focus on things that he actually could be decent at.
Yeah, this is reminding me a lot of a conversation we had last year about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, where there's like definitely like positives the guy brings. There's like good energy, and if he just focused on the things he was good at, it would be great. But with Rondae, it was like just careening in transition and kind of playing really out of control. And with Theo, like you say, I mean, even if he is playing 25 minutes and being asked to do too much, like 13 shots is probably more than he should be taking. It's a guy who's playing over his head and I think is probably trying to overcompensate, and it's just not working out as much as we would like.
Yeah, and it's like, I think one of the most important skills in the NBA is like actively having a good sense of what your strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah.
And I don't think Pinson has that. I really don't think Torian Prince has that, because he keeps like, he's not someone that is a proficient driver. Like at Baylor, he was a good three-point shooter, but he played the four. I mean, basically, he got all of his points from shooting threes and, like, pounding the offensive glass and on cuts and whatever. And he's not this one-on-one type player, and his handle is really bad. He doesn't have the instincts to do it. And we see it time and time again when he's driving, it's driving off his foot. He's getting to the basket and just has zero ability to finish. Like, I think you need to understand what you're actually good at. And for Torian Prince, that's gunning up threes. He did that at the start of the fourth quarter. I think he took three or four basically in a row. I mean, I think only one of those went in, but still, that's going to be a better shot for him than trying to take it to the basket. Maybe you want to move the ball more, but it's fine. You at least understand what shots you should be taking. And I think that's a really important skill that I wish everyone on the Nets had.
Yeah, Prince has been really frustrating. Like, just looking at the box score, like, he had like a very classic Torian Prince, 4 for 13 from the field, 3 for 9 from 3. Like,
yeah, and no free throws.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was sometime last year, we said like a classic Joe Harris shooting line was like 5 for 7, 4 or 5 from 3. And this now feels like a Prince version of that, which is not as good, I'll say.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have the Joe Harris one.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's like, and then turns it over three times. Like, the guy is just, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I think this is an interesting conversation. Like, we're about a month from the trade deadline. Is there any sense of at least seeing what you can get for Torian Prince? Two of the two guys you just extended, Torian Prince or Caris LeVert? Because LeVert, I mean, he still has a lot of potential when he's on the court, but that's few and far between. And I think at this point, with all these injuries, maybe you let him come back, hope he can play well, and see if his value appreciates. But like, it's every year with this guy, and I don't think he's ever going to stay healthy at this point.
Yeah, I think LeVert, you kind of have to hold on to him just because he's the only guy that I have like hope in right now long term, besides like the obvious stars like Kyrie and KD. But and also, I think if you look to trade him like right now, you're definitely selling low. I think for sure you need to see him come back. You need him to ideally play well before you'd even consider that, just because we've seen the ceiling on him. And to trade him like right after an injury, you're not going to get the return that you would otherwise. Like, he's the Nets' best hope in a trade of bringing in a third star. And so I think like trading him now to improve a team where this season isn't the focus, it's next year where things really need to come into place with KD coming back hopefully close to full strength. I don't think it makes sense to make a trade to help this year to maybe push you up to like that four seed range when the focus should be next year. I think LeVert is definitely a guy they should keep. With Prince, I would definitely be open to trading him. It's just a matter of if anyone would want him. In his last 11 games, he's shooting 27% from three. So like the one thing he's supposed to be good at, he hasn't been doing well. Also shooting 27% from the field. So he's not really getting it done from anywhere. Only giving you 2 assists a game in that stretch, under 10 points. So he's played really poorly. Obviously, I don't need to give you numbers to illustrate that. I know, you can just look at the games. But yeah, I think it's similar to what happened with Alan Crabb last year, where there was a stretch of like, I think it was like 5 games where he was just shooting the lights out. And I was very happy with it. And the first thing you said was they need to trade him now, which in retrospect was 100% correct. I think the Nets' best strategy with Prince is to just like hope he gets on a hot streak shooting wise and then immediately start making some calls.
Yeah, no, that's fair on Prince. Because also, like, I mean, who knows? I think he's someone that, like, I don't know if he's going to be super hyped to, like, take a lower usage role, but I think it will definitely do him good in terms of his percentages, at least. So seeing how he does this next month, and then from there, hey, can you get off him without having to take back, like, negative assets? I mean, I don't know who's really going to want him on a 2-year, $29 million contract. It's not egregious, but it's certainly not, like, a good value or anything. And the Nets did just get a couple first-round picks to take him on. I think one obviously was for getting off Alan Crabb, and the other was like, hey, we do think Torian Prince is worth the first round pick. I was interested by what he could do, but still somewhat skeptical that you're going to give someone a first round pick and then have to basically decide very early on in their tenure whether they're going to extend them or not. And, you know, the Nets didn't have to give Torian Prince an extension. They could have let this year play out and kept that flexibility. I would have been a fan of that, but you know, Sean Marks decided differently, and now they're kind of stuck with him committing 2 years to Torian Prince and seeing if anyone will take his contract. With LeVert, like, I think it's interesting because he could come in and really blow up and like, be at the form he was in the Philly series and at the beginning of last year, but also, I think once Kyrie comes back, you know, obviously Kyrie's Kyrie. Dinwiddie has descended to a point where he's clearly going to be the number two guy on the existing roster for this year. So that relegates Karis to kind of third ball handler duties and more so spotting up, and that's really not what he's good at. So how is he going to look in that type of role? And I think, and you could see his kind of reputation around the league and value decline just because he's not in a position where he's being asked to do stuff that he's good at.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely makes sense. It is going to be interesting to see. The point you made about Dinwiddie ascending to the second role, I think he's clearly the second best player, but I think just given their skill sets, it might wind up being like what it was at the beginning of the season where LeVert is still given more on-ball responsibility. At least that's what I would try to do if I was Kenny, just to try to maximize those guys' abilities. Like, Dinwiddie's much more capable off the ball, and then also just like staggering them so that not all three are on the court at once, but you kind of always have, ideally you always have two of Kyrie, Dinwiddie, and LeVert on the court at a time.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think, I mean, it's going to be a luxury having two of them on the court. Like, think about what we have had these last 20 games, so that'll be nice at least. And I did find that Alan Crabb hot stretch in December. He shot 52% from three.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine what I was saying on the podcast.
Like, you're euphoric. You're like, get him out now.
Yes, quick, immediately. And well, they waited till June to do it, and that's the price they paid. Maybe it would have been slightly less steep if they had done it in December, like I was asking for. But I did want to talk. There's a couple bright spots. I think TLC shooting the three ball really well, 2 of 3 from three. His ascendance continues, even though it is not the steepest ascendance. It's kind of a slow, gradual uphill climb. And then also Chandler, I mean, he was a minus 19, but I thought he played really well. I think that was kind of circumstantial. 11 points, 4-4 from the field. He was actually creating decent offense, which really none of the other Nets besides Musa were.
Yeah, he has that ability similar to Temple where, like, he's being asked to do too much right now, but I think his skill set would play really well alongside the Nets stars when they're healthy. And so seeing him just kind of show that off, like, if he's being asked to be like the fourth option on the court, I think that'll prove really, really effective for the Nets and for him. I think it'll help his game a lot.
Agreed on that front. And I think he's kind of rounding into form a bit. You know, he obviously had that 25 game suspension. He's been inconsistent, but there's definitely been flashes where he is a super useful player. So excited to see what he can bring to the table moving forward. And I think, it looks like I'd say once Karras comes back, they're obviously going to be a bit conservative playing him. I think Pinson's probably the first person to leave the rotation immediately, and then also if Temple comes back right away, Musa as well. TLC's minutes are going to go down a bit, but excited to see what Kenny can do with a bit more weapons in store, because you know, even though the Nets are on this 4-game losing streak right now, still have gone 12-10 without Kyrie, so it's been certainly a pleasant surprise how well they've been able to play given their shorthandedness.
Yeah, and hopefully they're able to turn around. It is like a semi-tough stretch coming up with Toronto, Orlando, OKC, Miami. That's four playoff teams as of right now. So hopefully getting LeVert back can right the ship. Is that an expression? I think it is. Right the ship.
Yeah.
Steady the ship.
The ship was lefted, and now we're going to right it. But Marcus, that will do it for us here today on the Locked On Nets podcast. Of course, subscribe to our podcast wherever you find it, whether it be Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Podbean. We are there. Rate us, review us. Follow us on Twitter also. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. But the podcast account where you hear both of us is at Locked On Nets. Sauce to follow. And until next time, be well.
Bye.